540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The Israeli military says it entered Gaza's El Shifa hospital to carry out an operation in a specific area. CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland points out,
differentiating between civilians, staff, patients, and Hamas fighters is going to be extremely difficult. And sadly, civilian casualties along the way would appear almost unavoidable.
Hamas says it holds Israel and President Biden fully responsible for the Israeli military's raid of Al-Shifa and adds that a U.S. intelligence statement that the U.S. supported Israel's conclusion that the militants had operations at Al-Shifa was a green light for the raid. Tens of thousands of demonstrators turned out in Washington, D.C. to show their support for Israel and its war with Hamas. WTOP's Nick Iannelli has more on the March for Israel.
What's your main message here?
Most important, bring the hostages home.
They turned the National Mall into a sea of white and blue as thousands wore the colors of the Israeli flag, some literally wearing the flag on their back like a cape.
The more people that show up, the more voice that you have.
We're about unity. We're about being together. We're about showing support.
The needs of Israel continue to grow.
We stand with Israel, and we are proud to be Jewish.
Nick Iannelli for CBS News, Washington.
At least six people have died and 18 others injured in a fiery highway crash in central Ohio. Officials say five vehicles were involved, including a tractor trailer and a chartered bus carrying high school students. WBNS-TV's Lacey Crisp reports.
There are children trapped on the bus.
The Tuscarawas Valley High School marching band, including sophomore Tori Wilson, were on their way to perform at a conference in Columbus moments before the deadly collision.
I could be one of the kids right now that is, you know, not here.
The U.S. House votes on a stopgap funding measure.
Two-thirds being in the affirmative, the rules are suspended. The bill is passed.
It now goes to the Senate ahead of a Friday government shutdown deadline. It's Republican Speaker Mike Johnson's two-step short-term plan. CBS's Scott McFarland.
Seems to be the fear that the Republicans who gave the new House Speaker a pass this time will be less likely to do so next time, you know, cutting a deal with Democrats, and that there's going to be a forceful, politically forceful attempt to exact more cuts, more controversial policy riders, and the next battle could be the long one that leads to a protracted government shutdown.
Instead of having to be demolished and rebuilt, California's governor says the stretch of arson-damaged I-10 freeway in Los Angeles can be repaired, and it's expected to take at least 3 weeks. No one is in custody, sources tell KNX. The cameras near the scene captured activity, but no identifiable faces. That's why the determination of arson. This is CBS News.
You don't need a job platform, you need a hiring partner. Indeed lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
Media News, I'm Nate Wuggehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. 96 people in Wisconsin died from domestic violence last year. That's the highest number in 22 years. Those numbers are from the group End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Some social workers tell the State Journal they're worried the situation will get worse with looming cuts to federal victim resource funding. There might be trouble ahead for efforts to keep the Brewers in Milwaukee. The state Senate votes Tuesday on an amended bill to pay for maintenance at American Family Field. But as of Monday night, not enough senators support it to pass. Democratic Minority Leader Melissa Agard.
We believe that we can improve upon the bill, and we're going to continue doing everything that we can to make sure that the state of Wisconsin is getting the best deal possible.
That's Agard on Upfront on WISN-TV in Milwaukee. I'm Nate Wuggehout, Civic Media News.
The Bucks win but lose a player. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks get the win over the Chicago Bulls last night at five-serve form, the final 118-109. But the team learned that they will be without forward Jay Crowder for 2 months. He needs surgery to repair a groin injury. Giannis Antetokounmpo.
You know, let's talk about Jay. It's going to be hard not to have him. His presence is very important to the team, making great plays offensively. So it's definitely going to be missed.
The Bucks head to Toronto to play the Raptors tomorrow night. Baseball. Reports say it appears that the Brewers will name bench coach Pat Murphy as the team's new manager. Craig Counsell says Cubs president Jed Hoyer called and met with him the first day he was a free agent.
Like, the organization is just in great health. Jed presented a very compelling vision of that. It is time to be a Cub. There is momentum happening here, and it feels close.
That's Cubs manager Craig Counsell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Don't change the station, but do watch out for deer, would ya? You know, they're running around all willy-nilly. It is the Cribscast with me, Charlie Behrens, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low of 41. Southwesterly winds, 8 to 15 miles an hour. 62 tomorrow, sunny skies. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 40. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 46 degrees.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. Whether you're heading down Les Paul Parkway or fighting traffic on the interstates, this is The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we've been talking about the last several weeks, lots of strike activity, lots of people taking to the streets. And as I said at the beginning, look, Sean O'Brien in his testimony talked about, you know, didn't say it the way I did, but I said, look, you got to support striking workers. You got to get out there and literally support them, walk with them. And look, this is where my Adopt a Striker program, this would be so perfect for the moment. Because on Thursday, November 16th, it's possible if you're in the Dallas area that you could adopt a striker. In fact, not just Dallas, in many places across the country, locally near Philadelphia, Boston, Charlotte, Washington, a bunch of places where American Airlines flies out of, you can adopt a striker because there's the potential of an informational picket happening all across the country. And here to share some thoughts on why this could be happening and, well, what we hope happens to avert it. I guess that's an airline term, isn't it? I've asked Paul Hartshorn to come talk with us. Paul is the National Communications Chair for the Association of Professional Flight Attendants. Their website, APFA Unity, or APFA.org. Paul, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for making time for me. Pleasure to be here.
So walk me through why are we here. What's going on? What's the demand? Why are we in this moment?
Yeah, the saga continues, right? The flight attendants of American Airlines have been in negotiations for 5 years now.
Hold on. 5 years?
5 years. 5 years. It's over, coming up on the fifth year anniversary that the contract became amendable between American Airlines and their flight attendant union.
So you haven't had a raise in 5 years?
We haven't had a raise since January of 2019. And these are wages that were negotiated in 2014. This is a company that is sending its new hires to Miami, New York City, Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, and expecting them to live on the 2014 wages.
How?
It's not easy. It's not pretty. We, as I said, been in negotiations for 5 years. We filed for federal mediation. Obviously, we're governed under the Railway Labor Act because we're a transportation union. Filed for mediation 6 months ago. This week, we are in negotiations with the company, with American Airlines. It's being held in Phoenix, Arizona, at the direction of the National Mediation Board. And if the company, American, does not make meaningful progress and moves towards adequate pay raises, towards improvements in our sick and vacation time, the ability for our flight attendants to retire with a little bit of dignity with a 401k, then we are going to be petitioning the National Mediation Board this week, early next week, to release us into a 30-day cooling off period.
Which inevitably down the road could lead to a strike, with which you just had a strike authorization vote of 99.47%. So literally one guy voted against the idea of a strike, but every other of your 20 some thousand members, they're like, hey, I can't live in Los Angeles on poverty wages. It's time to fight for something. That impressive.
Yeah, one guy hit the wrong button, you know. It was actually unbelievable. It was unprecedented, 99.5%. We had a 93% participation rate, something we've never hit before. The flight attendants are unified. They're committed. They are ready to put their livelihoods on the line. They tell us every day, from the most senior to the most junior at our company, they're ready to put their livelihoods on the line to secure the contract that we've earned, and most certainly the contract that these 26,000 flight attendants deserve.
Now, I go back to, you know, something that in Sean O'Brien's testimony, you know, CEO pay, you know, from 78 to 22 has gone up over 1,200%. But the average worker has only seen about a 15% wage increase over that same period of time. The American Airlines CEO, he's not poor, is he?
Certainly looks to me like he's making a good living. I will say, aside from his base salary, a lot of it is, you know, operational incentive, stock performance, things of that nature. But I think he puts his head on the pillow and rests peacefully at night, for sure.
No, because this is one of those things that, again, if you would have read O'Brien's testimony instead of being focused on the bread and circus of the day of whatever clown buffoonery was going on, you would have seen that he talked about in his testimony the fact that we give these corporations the ability to write off massive, you know, CEO compensation as long as it's tied to, you know, a performance-based pay stuff, which is basically pumping and dumping stocks. This is something that, you know, again, I'm so frustrated and angry over, but you've got a CEO at American who's like you said, he's putting his head on the pillow fairly comfortable at night while his workers are struggling in major cities across this country to produce the wealth that his company has that he gets to benefit from.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not just about the base compensation, of which we haven't had a raise in 5 years. It's other things. It's retirement. It's the way that our productivity has increased. Look, American Airlines took the opportunity during COVID to remove flight attendants from wide body equipment, all under the guise of, understandably, the flights were empty, right? The revenue wasn't coming in, with the understanding that those flight attendants would return. So that never happened. I know you're shocked, but that never happened. So these flights are flying at 100% capacity to Europe, South America, Asia now, sometimes transcontinental. And these flight attendants are being paid the same, and they're being much more productive. Obviously, from a crew standpoint and a passenger standpoint, we all suffer, but that's something the company's now not willing to give back.
Yeah.
So we're talking about base pay here. We're talking about retirement, understaffing, the ability to have a livable duty day, shorten our duty days so we're not on duty for 15, 16 hours a day. This is all basic stuff. A lot of this stuff are things that we gave up after the bankruptcies and the concessionary era that followed the tragedies of 9/11. Look, we gave up so much in base pay, so much in work rules. And what we're fighting to get back today in this contract that we are talking about doesn't even match what we, and I'll say we, me, because I was here, had in our contract in 1998. We're fighting for our sick time that matches what we had in 98. We're fighting for vacation pay of what we had in 2000 before the tragedies of 9/11 that just gutted the industry. So there's a lot at stake here. They're not willing to give this back. And I'm here to tell you and to tell everyone that we are not going to settle for a contract that doesn't pay us appropriately, that doesn't adjust for inflation and also a pay raise. This is our time. Look, this is a fight that you've seen. This is the working class fight, right? We saw it across industries. We saw it across unions. You're about to see it across airlines. We're not the only one. It's not just the flight attendants. It's the ground workers. It's the pilots. We are all going to come and really at today get what we have earned. And it's
exactly
time.
No, absolutely. And as you were talking, I'm thinking of the same conversations I had with strikers in, you know, in Michigan and in Toledo, Ohio, on the UAW picket lines, saying, look, you know, we sacrificed, we tightened the belt during the tough times. We helped these companies to survive, and now they're thriving and they don't want to share. And, you know, as you were talking about, you know, removing some of the flight attendants from the wide body planes, my mind goes to the old line of, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. You know, in this time of yeah. crisis, you're going to throw in, you're going to do a little extra work. You're going to work harder to make sure that, you know, no one gets left behind, that kind of a theory. And then the companies go, well, looks Look what you did. And look what we can now expect from you going forward. This is the thing that I think a lot of people are really upset about, especially coming out of the pandemic after they were called essential and heroes and patriotic and all of that other nonsense. Do you get that same sense?
Yeah, I get that same sense. I mean, working class Americans are fed up. They're disgusted. They're tired of being neglected. And I will say, for your listeners who may not know, we are governed under the Railway Labor Act. So we're not like a teachers union or the auto workers that can say when our contracts expire, we're walking off the job tomorrow. It is markedly different. The Railway Labor Act has its flaws, and that's probably for another conversation. But we do have to be released into a 30-day cooling off period before we can strike. So we've been very strategic. We've been very strategic with American, narrowing the issues, moving where we can to try to get to something that we can all work with. The idea the National Mediation Board says is that if we do release you, these issues should be able to be rectified within that 30-day cooling off period. The union has more than done its job coming together, moving things around to make it more palatable for the National Mediation Board to narrow the issues. But what we won't do is we won't narrow the issues on our compensation, our retirement, the scheduling flexibility that has been lost as a result of the COVID pandemic, as a result of flying that has changed, duty days that have increased, 4 or 5 flights a day instead of 2, 3 flights a day. All of this needs to be addressed. American Airlines knows they need to address it. They have ways to address it. There are even ways to address it that would benefit their crew scheduling department. They need to come to the table and they need to get this done. And this is the week that they need to do it because the union has set a deadline.
No, good for you. And look, you said you're strategic. I would argue patient as well. 5 years without a contract. It's just crazy to me. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Paul Hartshorn. Paul is the National Communications Chair for the Association of Professional Flight Attendants. Their website, APFA.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Now, like you said, you've got to go this whole process of before you can go through on a strike. And as you pointed out, as I pointed out, 99.47% of the members have said that they're ready to go on strike. The question is, will you be allowed to go on strike? I mean, as you pointed out, it's a long journey to get there. Air traffic is a big deal in this country. Do you think you'd be allowed to do it?
Like I said before, I think there's a strategy in how you do it. I think that you heard talk on Capitol Hill today about the inefficiencies within the Railway Labor Act, how you haven't seen transportation unions allowed to be released into a 30-day cooling off period like you did in the 90s. You saw a lot more. And I think that when you saw that happen, you saw companies and unions move and you had deals completed.
Right.
The way that it's doing now, that where we aren't releasing, and it's definitely a hit or miss if it's going to happen, needs to be addressed. It needs to be a process, and it needs to be respected. The Railway Labor Act was obviously not instituted to keep labor unions or labor groups from striking. That was never the intention. It was actually to be strategic about it and to plan ahead for it. And that's what we need to see. I think that we have a friend in Joe Biden and his administration. I think that we have been in touch with the White House. Our national president, Julie Hedrick, works closely with the Transport Workers Union, who represents Southwest. She works very closely with Sarah Nelson, representing the 20 airlines at AFA. And I think we're all on the same page that we need to have this way to bring this to a close. And I think we're going to have a friend in the Biden administration, and they're going to need to move this forward. So we're willing, we've been strategic, and we're going to work forward to this. And we're definitely, after this week, if we don't see meaningful movement, we're going to move the process forward.
Outstanding. On November 16th.
November 16th, you're going to, 13 crew bases and American Airlines focused cities across the country, apfa.org/picketing. Please join us. Please come out and see us. We'd love to have everyone there, unions, passengers, media, you name it.
There you go. Your opportunity to adopt a striker, get out there and walk on the picket line and get a great sign while you're there as well. Paul, I appreciate you taking some time for us. The best of luck, buddy. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again.
For sure. Keep in touch. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Paul Hartshorn, National Communications Chair with the flight. This is, again, amazing to me that we're in this moment and the CEO class still thinks it's pre-pandemic stuff. 5 years without a contract, amazing. But remember, on the 16th, find a striker, adopt a striker. That's the call. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, have I got the job for you? This is an amazing opportunity for the right candidate for the job of a lifetime. You could win this job. You could be the person who gets to ride the wiener. That's it. You could ride the wiener. You could ride the wiener mobile. I'm sorry. You could be a hot dogger. That's right. You could. I've seen him driving around, and I'm going, how do you get that gig? Well, I now know, and I think I'm going to apply. I think I'm going to try, and be a hot dogger, and ride the wiener mobile. I know there's some. Don't send me any memes. But Oscar Mayer, they are a craft company. They are seeking a wiener mobile driver. They are seeking someone to drive the wiener. And I guess you got to be a spokesperson too. The compensation, you ask, how much do you get paid? Well, compensation will be offered. It'll take into account internal equity. I don't know what that means. And also may vary depending on the candidate's geographic region, job-related knowledge, skills, and experience, among other factors. Don't really know what that means, but I'm sure they'll make up something. It's a one-year assignment paid, so you can be a hot dogger. Understand, the first iconic Wienermobile, 1936. They have created in 1988 this program, designed to hire and develop top talent, grow future leaders of the company, and create game changers, innovators, and cultural champions. The team of hot doggers in Wienermobile offer the Oscar Mayer brand an unparalleled competitive advantage, delivering incremental sales, merchandising, distribution, and creating a personal experience with thousands of consumers each year. That's right. You can go out on the road because the Hot Dogger program right now is seeking an individual, could be you, ready to deliver creative solutions on Kraft Heinz's journey to become the indispensable food company in North America. I already thought they were. Anyway, the Hot Dogger Tour, the Oscar Mayer Hot Dogger program, is a one-year assignment starting and ending the first week of June. 12-month program includes being the face of a multi-billion dollar brand while acting as our trusted boots on the ground. 2 weeks of immersive onboarding and relevant job training, on good coaching, ongoing coaching and mentoring through staff meetings and in-field meetings, post-tour opportunities and connections with Kraft Heinz and hundreds of successful alumni. You too can be a wiener in the Wiener Club, evidently. Regular meetings and coaching from top public relations and social media people, regional and partnership assignments that provide professional growth, chance to see the country. You can drive a giant wiener all across the country. What do you need to, you ask, how do I get this wonderful opportunity? What is it in me that they are seeking? Well, they want people who are experienced in working with the public and consumers. And I am. I'm Mr. Consumer Service. I'm Mr. Customer Service. You need to have prior travel experience. I've got that. You need to be highly autonomous. Require organizational and time management skills. Oh, damn. Understanding a popular social media channels. I kind of get that. Ability to work independently and within a team. And not so good with the team. I can do it. I'm okay by myself. Positive and outgoing. A people person. Damn. All right. Well, I guess I'm out. Now, they do describe the life as a hot dogger. While no 2 days are the same in the Hot Dogger program, a tour includes representing the Oscar Mayer brand. Every day you crisscross the hot dog highways of America, executing and reporting over 200 events during 1 year, pitching and appearing on local television. Yeah, you want to be seen standing next to a giant wiener. Uh-huh. You know what? That's the thing. If they were dumb enough to give me the job, I would have to live with the reality that I'm going to be standing next to a giant 28-foot wiener for the rest of my life, because none of my friends are going to let me live that down. Never, ever, ever. You'll have to create social media content for their social platforms, maintain and drive the 87-year-old icon and piece of American pop culture. You mean I got to change the oil? I got to fix the damn thing too. It's bad enough I got to ride on it. I got to fix it too. Okay. Coordinating with all aspects of Wienermobile travel logistics, so I got to plan my own trip. Okay, great. And I guess then there's a ton more, and I only got a couple minutes to wrap this up. And while it's been fun, here's the kicker. Sounds like a job, right? Sounds like something where you go, hey, you know, it's got to pay pretty well, right? Well, evidently, $35,000 a year. You're making a little over $15, almost $16 an hour. And here's the kicker. You need a bachelor's degree to get the job to drive a wiener. How ridiculous. You're going to drive the wiener. It's like, you know, being the guy who has to dress up in the costume and stand out on the street corner and spin a sign going, hey, you know, for $35,000 a year, you need a bachelor's degree. How stupid is this? But I love the way that they put it. If you relish the chance to hitch a ride in the wiener. But, you know, while this is all fun, it's kind of hysterical. They want you on the road for an entire year. They want an entire year of your life to go out and pitch their brand, be a spokesperson to all these media outlets, take damn pictures of the thing with yourself at it and others. And $35,000 is what they're willing to spend for that. We're talking a multi-billion dollar industry. And, you know, it's quite remarkable. And look, there will be people who do it. And look, if I was a young kid who was just looking to drive around and make myself look ridiculous, this is probably what I would go, hey, yeah, I can crash a wiener. I can run a wiener into things just as well as anybody. Yeah. Now, I do also like their values. Let's finish on the values. Hot doggers are expected to embody the values. Consumer obsessed. Do better every day. Champion great people. Diversity. Do the right thing. Yeah, you gotta have a bachelor's degree in public relations or journalism to drive a freaking wiener.
The Shaw, WAUK.
CBS News Brief. The Israeli army says military forces have conducted a precise and targeted operation against Hamas inside Gaza City's biggest hospital. CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland.
There may be even the possibility that in the complex or below ground under the complex, there may actually even be hostages. And one has to consider that.
At least 6 people are dead and 18 others hurt in a crash on I-70 east of Columbus, Ohio. It was a fiery crash involving a semi, cars, and a charter bus carrying high school students. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine.
Certainly is the worst nightmare that families can endure or school can endure.
The House passes Speaker Johnson's bill to prevent a government shutdown, sending it to the Senate. CBS's Scott McFarland.
It funds one-third of the government through January, the other two-thirds through February, and that other two-thirds includes the military. So there's two different bites at the apple members will have to do the things they want to do with spending bills.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Your hometown radio refreshed. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wegehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A number of Republican voting rules are one step closer to becoming constitutional amendments. One of the proposed amendments, passed by the state Senate Tuesday, would require voters to show a photo ID issued by the state of Wisconsin. Another would require voters in Wisconsin to be U.S. citizens. A third would ban local governments and elections officials from using private donations to pay for their work. Wisconsin schools are doing better, according to the latest accountability report cards from the State Department of Public Instruction. 378 public school districts were evaluated, and 94% of them met, exceeded, or significantly exceeded expectations. DPI says achievement improved from last year to this year, though for many schools and districts, this year's performance is lower than before the pandemic. I'm Nate Wegehout, Civic Media News.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. It's your hometown radio, refreshed.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Partly cloudy skies tonight with a low of 41. Southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. 62 tomorrow, sunny skies. Tomorrow night, lows level off around 40. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 45 degrees.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
And the other fact that can now be confirmed. Reliable source, Mrs. Crudy. Derek Van Orden's staff will offer you a beer, Miller Lights. At least they're not Bud Light. At 10:30 in the morning. DC time on a Thursday.
DC tell us 9:30 Central, Crudy. That's pretty early.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Broadcasting to Waukesha at 101.1 FM. Broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM. This is The Shaw, WAUK. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I do stand corrected on the salary for the wiener job, because you too could drive the wiener. The base salary is $35,000 a year, but hey, you get a food allowance and an expense allowance of $150 a week. And I'm looking at that. I'm going, wait a second. I don't know that $150 a week is enough. Not just food, but personal travel as well. Any of your personal expenses, $150 a week doesn't seem like a lot to eat on, even a single person, unless they're giving you all the wieners you can eat. And then, well, do they pay for the cholesterol medicine? I do not know. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. How are you?
I am good. I'm thinking about a career change. I'm thinking about driving the wiener mobile.
Well, I'm going to put a caption to that. When you finish that, we've got Speaker Johnson, Speaker Smith. Yeah. Paul Ryan, who became Speaker of the House and was a candidate, as you remember, with Mitt Romney for VP.
Yeah.
All right. When he was a teenager, he worked for Oscar Mayer, and he drove the Wienermobile.
Wow.
Yes, he drove it, and he became Speaker of the House. So there is a future for you.
So maybe they should be advertising this. Hey, you want to be? Well, no, I don't think Speaker is that attractive of a job anymore. I think driving the Wienermobile would be more fun.
Well, driving the Wienermobile these days, you'll have more longevity than being Speaker of the House. So, but that is a true story. They made fun of him a lot, but he drove the Wienermobile when he was a teenager.
Well, yes, sir. Everyone wants to have a 27-foot wiener. So there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Good for him. But here's the thing. You think back to that. You're a 16-year-old driving that thing around. That was kind of when you're a kid, you do dumb things like that. You wear the funny paper hat to work at the McDonald's. You do that because that's the next thing. They want a college graduate. They want people with lots of qualifications. I'm going, back then, no self-respecting adult with a college degree would do this kind of job. Now this is what they've expected from us.
You think Marjorie Taylor Three names, she could ride the Wiener Mobile.
I hope we'd run her over.
I mean, I just wonder, would she be good at it, do you think? What do you think?
I'm not going there. I'm not
Marjorie going Taylor there. Green, could she drive that thing?
Yeah, I'm sure she would. I'm sure she would.
Okay.
All right. So now that I'm right to the FCC line, I think.
Yeah, Congresswoman Boebert, she could be. I think she's proven herself to be a good driver.
I'm sure she could, but according to her tweets, she does her best work on her knees. So.
Okay.
Yeah, let's leave that word. I don't know what that means, but we're going to leave that where it is. Let's talk about Mike Johnson.
Speaking of another wiener, go ahead. Yes. Focus.
Focus. It's late. Maybe not late enough. But let's talk about Johnson since he might not be around much longer. We actually got a deal. There's going to be no shutdown.
Yeah, I mean, the wiener thing goes on. Speaking of wieners, Matt Gaetz, we've got to see what he thinks, of the whole thing.
I think we're beating the wiener.
It's been avoided, and it was a bipartisan vote. So the House has passed it. The final vote was... Now, this was 336 to 95.
Right.
All right. So if Gaetz now tries to take him out over this, it will be... I don't think they will. Well, I know they won't now. It would be the next time.
Right.
It would be the next time. It extends it till January the 19th. Because he technically did, in a longer version... of what McCarthy did.
No, he had to. I mean, there was no exit for him.
Of course.
Democrats were not going to cave in this moment, which, good on them for finally finding a set to go, never mind, finding a set and standing up to this. And it's, mm-hmm. and look, I was never going to stand for them, you know, cutting, doing this laddered, you know, shutdown where you know they're going to go after food stamp programs. You know they're going to go after programs that help people first to cause, you know, pressure points and pain. So, you know, this is a good development for me. I think this is the right thing.
Well, right. He went ahead, you know, it was, let's see, he had 90 Republicans. I'm doing the numbers here. He had 127 Republicans. So 90 Republicans, 90 voted against it. Now, some people had told me, they said, well, the Democrats will let it tank, so he's, you know, thrown out. I said, no, actually, the Democrats voting for it is a public policy piece itself. But politically, the Democrats voting for it will allow Matt Gaetz to say, aha, you see what the traitor did.
Yeah.
But he had a lot of, you know, he had a lot of Republicans against this. I think more Republicans were against it than would normally have been because of the fact that, you know, they knew the Democrats were going to step in to make sure the government didn't shut down. There was nothing wrong with what the Democrats did at all for public policy.
No.
Nothing.
No.
It's not, they didn't give away anything. They didn't, you know, let Johnson change the world. So it's okay what they did. Now, the bill doesn't include any supplemental for Israel and Ukraine, and the Senate has, despite not full Democratic support, the Senate has taken the standalone Israel bill and added the Ukraine to it. So then it goes back, and then, you know, there'll be some type of conference committee over it.
And let the fighting begin.
And
speaking of fighting, I'm sure you saw the news was just all awash over Mark Wayne Mullen, you know, stand your butt up, you know, going after Sean O'Brien of the Teamsters. And also you had the former speaker, evidently Kevin McCarthy, elbowed this representative, Tim Burchett, which Tim's saying he's still sore. It was a good shot to the kidneys. He might not be able to come to work tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. You know, depending on where that happened, because I was looking, for example, at the tape. I don't know if you saw Justin Trudeau elbowing the female member of parliament. I don't know if you saw that or not. He elbowed her. I watched the tape 5 times, but he didn't know he was elbowing her. You know, he was angry. They were holding up a member, and he went over and elbowed his way through, you know, and hit her. So I don't know where McCarthy was to have done this. If it's in the Capitol, I assume there's a tape of it, you know?
Yeah. Evidently, from what I understand, he was doing an interview, and, you know, supposedly McCarthy came up and elbowed him in the back. And now was it a vicious elbow? I mean, the way you hear it spun is, you know, it was a vicious attack from the behind. He caught me off guard, it's one of those things where you go, he could have been, you know, just, he was just trying to get through. And like you said, it was elbowing his way through and didn't mean to, you know, put any real oomph behind it. And this guy's just overreacting because you got McCarthy saying, well, I didn't elbow anybody. If I hit somebody, they'd know I hit him. And you go, look, get out of here. This is just ridiculous. It's more bread and circus.
I did Tennessee radio today. All right. So my comment for Tennessee radio is, okay, the congressman is from Tennessee. He's not from, you know, Rodeo Drive. And so I think he would be criticized more by his constituents for not turning around and grabbing McCarthy by the coat.
Yeah.
And saying, hey, so I think he'll be called a wimp, frankly, in Tennessee. This might go a different direction for him.
No, it should. I mean, since it is, you know, it's Vigilante Justice Day, we're going back to, you know, Aaron Burr's name was brought up today. So, you know, maybe we go back to dueling.
Right. Now the other one, which I thought was interesting, you know, was when Bernie Sanders basically had to stop the potential fist fight. I think it would have been interesting to see who would have won that.
I think Mullen would have won.
Well, I'm just
Mullen's
saying,
a professional,
you know,
fighter.
What's that?
Mullen's a professional fighter. I mean, there's a guy who
he
trains
I guess
for
so.
That.
That's true. He's from Oklahoma, and he was But yeah, he challenged Sean O'Brien, but I don't know. That's kind of something else, you know?
Yeah. Well, for me, that was performative. That was to change the narrative of what came out of it. Because did you hear anybody report anything other than that came out of that hearing?
Nothing.
Nothing.
No.
And we do this all the time. Here's the Daily Outrage. Here's the Bread and Circus. Here's the clown show. And we never talk about the substantive issues that they brought up. That my friend Sarah Nelson and Sean Fain and Sean O'Brien brought up in that hearing, which is, how do we ensure that workers get a fair shake? How do we get good opportunities at better wages, hours, conditions, all of that stuff? How do we hold corporations accountable? How do we stop the growing monopolization of industry after industry? But we didn't hear any of that. We heard, stand your butt up. That's what we got from our mainstream media.
Theatrics.
That's it.
Done on purpose. He knew what would happen.
Yep. Someone, I said that to someone earlier, and they said, "Well, you give him too much credit." I go, "No, it's not a matter of credit. They train these people to understand how to think and how to play the news cycle. You don't get to be a senator if you don't know how to play the game."
Mm-hmm. Right, that's true. Well, I remember I'm trying to remember the Democrat congressman from New York. Can't remember which one, and it was either Boebert or Green, and they were outside with the media, and one of them started with the other, and then they got into this, I'm going to whoop you thing or whatever they did. And I can't even remember now what the press conference was about, because the two of them, Democrat and Republican, went at each other,
Oh, yeah. Who was
saying
that?
Saying things. And, of course, the media put that on for the evening, and the press conference was wiped out, So, yeah, a lot of theatrics. And somebody said to me, well, maybe you're just getting old and you're looking back on these things different. No, I'm not. Now, I remember when one member threatened another member to break his finger or something, and, I can remember that. But in general, we had 80% less of this stuff years back. 80% less of this. This has become a theatrics event.
Why is that? Is it because just our media culture with social media that you didn't have back then, that everyone needed to be on, performing to get attention? Is it because people, respected the institution more, leadership had more control? Any thoughts on why?
I think it's a couple of things, because some of this is internal Republican to Republican, too. First of all, they're getting more media attention by these things happening. Like I said, things used to happen, when I was there, but the attention paid to it wasn't the same. You know what I mean?
Yeah, if a senator would have said, stand your butt up, you're arguing it wouldn't have gotten as much attention.
Right. Things happen in today's world. That's it. The media, the national media goes crazy with it. I think, number two, the civility's gone. I've said before to people that, when I got in trouble, I had phone calls from Democrats saying, how's your kids doing? How's everything going? And, that type of thing, occurred out there in D.C. And people, if some member had a member of their family pass away, people went to the funeral, opposite parties. So there was, even though it was the Gingrich Clinton days, all right, where everybody thought that was bombastic, look at today. It was like Clinton and Gingrich were, smoking a cigarette together. I mean, compared to what goes on today. So I think the civility absolutely changed. The political entertainment is getting more media than substance, because who really cares about $32 trillion in deficit? You don't even hear that mentioned, but you'll hear these things mentioned. So, I think the media has fostered it. I think some members have gotten on, like the Boeberts of the world and Marjorie Taylor Greene, have gotten on to the fact that they can get a lot of attention by doing something goofy. And that brings me to my third point. Maybe there's more goofy people elected today, I don't know, than back then, maybe.
No, I think you had some goofballs back then, but just not as many.
Yeah.
I think there are more goofballs now.
Maybe there's a little bit more now.
And I would argue gerrymandering has a lot to do with that.
Uh-huh.
because you have really safe districts where you can be the crazy guy who gets the most attention, you know, gets the most attention and the most votes. At least that's my thought on it.
Yeah.
Finally, yeah. Got to get your thought on, since it's Ohio, but there's a Republican panel in Ohio that approved House Bill 272. It's a piece of legislation that would allow concealed carry into buildings with a courtroom. Evidently, it has been sent to the House floor. So basically, as I understand this piece of legislation, you can carry your concealed weapon into courthouses, just not into the courtroom. Is this a smart thing?
Yeah, I don't understand, what they're doing. Under the revised code now in Ohio, of course, it's a felony to convey, you know, a deadly weapon into a courthouse or a building with a courthouse, in fact. And even if you have the concealed carry permit, you can't bring your firearm into the courthouse. And I just don't understand what potentially would benefit anyone to change that. And then if you can take it into the courthouse but not into the courtroom, do you have to put it then in a lockbox, or you just carry it around in the courthouse as long as you're not walking into the courtroom?
Yeah, I mean, more good guys with guns, I guess, is the answer to that, Bob.
Well, here's the other thing too, Rick. I was not a gun control advocate, when I was in Congress, but the litmus tests were different. Now it's like, well, you know, you don't have to take any training to carry a gun or to have a gun permit. You don't have to have any training. Well, wait a minute. That's just wrong. So today, I'm a pro gun control guy because I think you ought to, you know, just like you drive a car, but I think you ought to have some type of training. Why not?
Yeah.
You know, and those things are done away with. The litmus tests have changed, and it's absolutely amazing. I can't understand who, has to yield to these types of things. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's NRA
it's
money.
It's gone overboard.
To me, it's NRA money. But, you know, we were in Buffalo over the weekend, and, we went to the Teddy Roosevelt inaugural site there. And right after, we went and did a little grocery shopping before we went and did some tailgating at the Bills Broncos game. And the supermarket we went to was the Tops on Jefferson Street, where the massacre had happened. I guess it was a year or so ago, where 10 people were killed in the supermarket. And there's a big mural off on the building across the street. And I walked into that place, and I couldn't help but think about, you know, after seeing that, I couldn't help but think about, some guy with an AR-15 walked into this place and shot people buying produce. And then where would you run? Because once you were in that supermarket, there were no other exits other than that front door. And that really, again, when you think about those terms, I then become, someone who's a little more willing to say, you know what, not everyone needs a semi-automatic weapon.
Right. Right. Well, permitless, like I said, permitless carry. No requirement for a safety course, at least.
It's crazy.
When I say the litmus tests have changed, they have changed. It's like you can have no form of anything, or you're a gun grabber.
Yeah, slippery slope, so Bob. Slippery changed. Slope. Yeah, scary times. But, Bob, I appreciate the time, and, stay away from that Wienermobile.
Hey, how much does it pay?
$35,000 a year, that's it.
Oh, yeah, I'm down. That's it, yeah. I'm going to apply for that. Then I'll run for speaker.
Look at that. $150 a week in food and personal expenses. Can't go wrong. Yep. It's about $42,000 a year in money in your pocket. I'll send you the application.
Okay.
Because you are a people person. You would get that. But thanks so much, our good friend Bob Ney. And look, that's the only downfall. I'm not a people person. I wish I were. I wish I could be, bright and cheery. And yeah, maybe not. Gonna take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1903. Working women from around the nation founded the National Women's Trade Union League in Boston. The organization's founders included female reformers, working class women, as well as women from wealthy families. The purpose of the organization was to assist in the organization of women wage workers into trade unions, and thereby to help them secure conditions necessary for healthful and efficient work and to obtain a just reward for such work. One of the inspirations for the Women's Trade Union League was the work of Settlement House organizer Jane Addams. The Women's Trade Union League recognized that women across economic classes were united by what they called the bonds of womanhood. Wealthy league members donated money to the cause. They often served as spokeswomen and arranged for legal representation for workers when necessary. When the league was founded, the trade union movement was male-dominated. The male trade unionists worried more women in the labor market would drive down men's wages. Often union leaders were unwilling to allow women into their ranks. The Women's Trade Union League was one of the primary organizers of female garment workers, particularly in New York City and Chicago. The league was a key supporter of the 1909 New York City shirtwaist workers strike, also known as the Uprising of 20,000. The league was also a vocal advocate for the women's suffrage movement. The Women's Trade Union League disbanded in 1950, and in 1974, the Coalition of Labor Union Women was founded in Chicago to continue the fight to ensure women have a voice in the labor movement. However, women workers still earn about 80 cents on the dollar compared with men. The work of the Women's Trade Union League remains unfinished. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, rick@ricksmithshow.com. Got an email from Terry. She says, got my engineering degree from GMI, just like Mary Barra did. She's the CEO of Ford. I spent my career watching the auto giants take benefits away from the union rank and file and their salaried people. My dad retired from GM with full benefits and a retirement package. I got none of that. No CEO deserves to make millions, including Mary. The CEOs in this country wouldn't have a job if not for the rest of us. And the, you know, this has been my point for a very long time. It's the same thing I say about billionaires. There should be no billionaires. Sorry. Yeah, I want you to do well. I want people to be well off. I want them to be able to take care of their kids and their grandkids. But this is the kind of enormous wealth that we've allowed to accumulate in the hands of the few is troubling. Now, you know, I go back to my time in Buffalo at the inaugural site, and the statement from Andrew Carnegie about, you know, money in the hands of, you know, the masses, the unwashed masses, the uneducated, you know, those people, it's wasted. You need to put it in the hands of people who know what to do with it. And this is what we've gone back to. See, we went from that, having a handful of, you know, really super wealthy people who had all the control of government and all the control of business and did whatever they wanted. And then we went to democratize things. We went through the New Deal. We went through the idea of, you know, of worker power. We created a broad class of working people who were prosperous. And now we've swung back the other way to where you've got a handful of really rich people who know what to do with the money. Because we got that argument. We need to cut taxes, cut taxes, cut taxes. Because the rich people know what to do with the money. And I agree, they do. They've always known what to do with the money. And that is make more money for themselves. Now, the other benefits that happen with working people don't happen naturally. Because sorry, benevolent dictators don't like to share. They share enough just to keep you from rising up and putting their head on a platter. And I think we're in a moment right now where our billionaire class is kind of concerned. If you start seeing a lot of billionaires coming out saying, hey, we need labor unions, we need to change the law, not just the patriotic millionaires and a handful of fringe folks, but the Jamie Dimons of the world, the big CEO class, start saying, you know, we need to throw them a bone. You know they're worried about their heads being on a platter. But I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@ricksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Yeah, it's amazing. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time. Maybe I'll get the job at the Wienermobile. Who knows?
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@therixsmithshow.com.
You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W26XBR Waukesha.
And the other fact.
And always streaming on the Civic Media
Reliable Source, Mrs. Crew.